I'm on a mission to help high flyers just like yourself, who until now have let the fear of public speaking hold them back from making a bigger impact. Join me as I find out the secret sauce from the world's leading speakers to make your speeches more interesting, enjoyable to give, and impactful for your audience. That's the mission, and this podcast will get you there. My name's Victor Ahipeni, and this is the Public Speaking Secrets Podcast.
Speaker Nation, what's happening? Welcome to another episode of Public Speaking Secrets. I'm your host, Victor Ahipeni. Super excited to have you on here, and I know your day is going to be better because I have Maura Sweeney, who is the Ambassador of Happiness, and that's not just the name thrown around. That's a trademarked name that she was first bestowed upon at the Nelson Mandela Day celebrations that she spoke at. And we're going to go into her speaking and what she's done, but then also something that I think a lot of you will find benefit of if you're looking to get more exposure for both your speaking and your business, and that is the media, which is something that I know can massively jumpstart the opportunities you get with speaking and the social proof. But we'll dive into that, and I want to welcome our Ambassador of Happiness to the show.
Victor, thanks a lot for having me. I'm thrilled to be with you.
So take us through that. Like, where did this Ambassador of Happiness come from? I mean, it's not something how did you become a doctor? It's how did you become the Ambassador of Happiness? And I mean, what were the kind of things that led you there?
Well, how about if I told you that when I was small, I was very unhappy. And the reason why I was unhappy was I felt like I could never do what I wanted to do. I couldn't be who I wanted to be. And I couldn't pursue the things I wanted to pursue. Now, you want to think about, imagine a five-year-old child, small, right? And you think, what is a five-year-old child interested in? Well, I was thinking about, this is crazy, and I'm going to date myself. I was thinking about things like leadership. We had John F. Kennedy in the White House when I was in kindergarten. I loved the form, the style, and the spirit of his leadership. I, as a little kid, felt like, oh, I want to be part of what this man is doing and where he's going. So leadership was big. Number two, I used to, I remember in my front lawn, looking up in the sky, watching airplanes fly ahead. And all I can imagine was traveling the world, literally traveling the globe to make new friends around the world from every, I want to say from every culture, and making friends with these people. And the third thing that I was so interested in, which is part of my backstory of not being happy, I remember my grandfather's legal secretary. My grandfather was an attorney, and I was supposed to be following his footsteps as an attorney. This is up in the New York metro area. But instead of being interested in what he was doing, all I was taken up with was his legal secretary's typewriter. And at the time, it was an old-fashioned standard royal typewriter. And I noticed that this woman was creating documents with words on them. I couldn't even read at the time. I was probably preschool. And when I realized through her that these official documents were carrying ideas on them that were going to be disseminated to other people, that other people would read about and reconsider their own thoughts and belief systems, those three things, Victor, great leadership that made everybody feel excited, uplifted, unified, the idea of conveying ideas through print or whatever, and thirdly, traveling the world and making new friends. Do you believe that all three of those things are what I do today? However, when I was small, I was just really unhappy. My mother had me doing everything I didn't want to do, dressing the way I didn't want to dress, studying things I wasn't interested in. You know, I would have rather gone for dance lessons, and instead I was in the house learning classical piano and writing thank you notes. And so as a real small child, I felt very confined and very unhappy. And one day at about 9 years old, I thought, well, I was first child, always followed the rules. I thought, I'm not happy, but I'm a little kid. I can't take off on my own. So I'll play by the rules, but I promise myself I'm going to grow up happy, number one. And number two, I'm going to grow up free to be who I want to be. And here I am decades later. I left law school midstream. I had a career in corporate management where I really learned how to develop people and really create winning cultures. I've traveled to 60 countries. And after raising a daughter, homeschooling her, sending her away, and even helping my husband develop a business, I thought, you know what? If I don't jump off now and do what I want to do, it's never going to happen. So I started blogging. I started doing videos. I was an early adopter, traveling, doing videos, interviewing people, asking people reflective questions. I got onto Huffington Post. Apparently, they were happy to have someone who's writing about what is it that makes people happy from the inside out. I was always interested in good government, good ideas. And all of these things I kept working on together. Oh, and then I wrote some books about learning, starting with learning how to dance, starting at age 50, and it launched my Art of Happiness series. So all I did, Victor, I put all the things I was interested in, and you want to talk about developing a brand. I put all of my attention and my efforts into creating thoughts around a better society designed from the inside out rather than from the outside in, as most of society does. We follow what we see rather than saying to our souls and ourselves, like, what do I really like? What are my values? What's of interest to me? And how could I become my best person? So that's what I was doing, starting at like age 50, which you think, oh, that takes a lot of nerve. And then ultimately, I ended up getting an invitation to speak at the inaugural Nelson Mandela Day celebrations held outside our nation's capital a couple of years ago. It was sponsored by the UNESCO Center for Peace, and they had all of these dignitaries coming in, and they said to me, all right, so Maura, what is your title? Because they were creating, I guess, their their roster.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a title. I had a website called Maura for You because I was such an advocate for people, and they said, we have the perfect title for you. You travel the world. You write about what makes people happy. We're going to call you the ambassador of happiness. And I was like, that so fits me. And everybody I knew who was following all of my writing said, Maura, that's right. That's what you are. And to finish that whole story, Victor, I'm thinking not only is that like a great made up title for me, if it suits me to a T, but someone from out west here in the U.S., contacted me, and he runs a radio show. I don't know if it was out of Las Vegas, but maybe. And he said, Maura, big marketing guy from years ago in Manhattan. And he said to me, Maura, I have interviewed people all over the place. He said, from every background. And he said, but I've never interviewed the ambassador of happiness. I want you on the show. After I got off his show, he said to me, well, I hope you got that title trademarked. And I said, well, why? He said, Maura, if you don't get it trademarked, somebody else will. Go get it trademarked. So now I'm the officially trademarked ambassador of happiness. And Victor, if I could add one more thing, I have probably spoke dozens of times in public, and I've also been in the media overseas in maybe, I don't know, 10, 12 countries. And I have been on places like national news, and they introduce me as the ambassador of happiness from the United States of America. So there you go, from dreams to reality. These are the things that make me happy, and I hope to inspire other people to find their own happiness, and in so doing, to really help create a better world. Well, that's a very long answer to a short question, but there you go.
That's it. But that's what I love is, like, as you were saying all of that, I was thinking, well, how would that affect the world? Like, as in, I wasn't thinking that it wouldn't. Of course it would. You'd think if more people got to know more people, more cultures, if they did more of what they loved. So I was just thinking, like, yeah, you were this 4 and 5 year old, curious young girl, and they put you into school. Don't ask questions. Do as they say. Stay in the box and follow the routine. And I mean, we've just said, I'm might be living in Australia, but I'm from New Zealand originally, and we've just had some pretty tragic stuff that you would have had on. And what the big thing that's come out of it, apart from New Zealand staying as a really strong country, is the leadership shown by Jacinda Ardern, our Prime Minister. She's the way that she responded and things like that, and she's brought out of something tragic, she's brought New Zealand closer together. That awesome leadership, she's inspired people to meet other people. Like, a lot of the things that you were talking about, it was just really resonating. Great leadership, spoke from the heart, brought people together of all different races and religions to be stronger than one gunman, one terrorist. And through that tragedy, there's been a lot of happiness. So you see, if everyone in the world, if there were great leaders who inspired that sort of stuff, like yourself and Jacinda, then it would the world can only be a better place if those sorts of things happen.
Very true. And isn't it amazing? It's like we instinctively or intuitively know a lot of this. But if you realize it, think about the news. You know, here in the U.S., but I'm I don't want to say a news hound, but I'm very much an observer of what society promotes in the space of ideas. And a lot of the ideas that are out there are polarizing and they're divisive, or you could say divisive, however you want to call it, and frightening for people. And all of that is so disempowering. And the more that people focus on the negative, the worse they feel. So I am always out there with the upper level thoughts to bring people together. I'll tell you, when I was writing for Huffington Post, I did it for several years as a regular columnist. And then I think it was about a year ago, Huffington Post just discontinued that process for all of the contributors. But I would focus on the things that uplifted and united society rather than depressed and divided them. And I'm telling you, people do not realize. That's why people have to wake up. If you're listening constantly to people who want to frighten you, and this could be in the spheres of racism, religion, politics, you're in the wrong zone. And you know what's going to happen? The more you stay in the frightened zone, the less creative you're going to be, the less energetic you're going to be, and the worse you're going to feel. So my whole thing is just the opposite. And you know what? I should share something with you, Victor. This is really good. We live on opposite sides of the world. But I not only do I write about happiness, but I also have been conducting a world happiness survey. So I've got people from, you know, as young as age 16, as old as in their 90s, not only from many states here in the U.S., but from, gosh, what am I up to, like 28 countries around the world. And they're from every background, every educational background. And you want to know what I asked everybody? How would you define happiness? Now, with all of these hundreds and hundreds of responses, let me tell you what everybody defines happiness is. And this has nothing to do with your race, your gender, your age, your income. This is what people want. Ready? They want healthy relationships, as in, I want less drama. They want peace of mind. They want freedom in life. They want a sense of purpose and fulfillment. And lastly, from all those things, they want to feel personally confident. Now, so think about this. Imagine if that's a unifying piece of what all people around the world are really looking for, then why do we spend so much of our time in negative space and negative zones that only brings people down? So I'm like the opposite. I'm like the person that's always out there lobbying for people's attention to put them in a space and a place where they feel uplifted. And whenever people feel uplifted, so many new ideas and collaborations come out of that. And I believe right behind it comes a much better society.
I mean, I think you find that the interesting thing is there's what people think happiness or what they define happiness as, what they're willing to do to get happiness, and then what they actually do. It's and that's where it, they feel in their comfort zone, like, you know, what should I do? Should I read Think and Grow Rich, or should I read tabloids about how some famous person's relationship isn't going well, or how there's a war in another country that doesn't matter to me as much as it as, you know, as I care about, or some religion or some race is, you know, coming into the country as a whole. And I mean, yeah, massively off topic, but I think it's a very interesting thing. We, you know, it's easy to say, I want to lose weight, or I want to have a better relationship. The actual, one of my mentors, he says, the change happens where the pain of staying still, or where the pain is of moving forward is greater than the pain of staying still. And I don't know if he coined it or if someone else coined it, but yeah, when you actually think about that in a deep way, it's like, we want this. It's, when are we finally so sick of being in our comfort zone or continually doing what we want? And yeah, the same, yeah, that we're actually going to do something to change it. And yeah, that's where you see these radical transformations of people you haven't seen for years who have gone and started a successful business, or and being the ambassador of happiness at age 50, or losing 100 kgs of body weight, or finding their dream person. It's when they've got sick of, or doing not them to their maximum extreme, and that change happens. And I mean, the exact same thing that I've seen with helping people with public speaking, is you have these people like, I trained, had a guy come on one of my one day trainings, and at the start of the day, he hadn't psychologically admitted it out loud. Subconsciously, he knew it. He was middle management at a big four accounting firm and had been avoiding taking presentation opportunities and pitch opportunities and a lot of opportunities to take him to the next level because he wasn't a confident public speaker. And it wasn't until he pushed himself out of the comfort zone and came to the event. We pushed him out of his comfort zone even further. And by the end of the day, it was like the next week, he's like, oh yeah, I put my hand out for this and this. And I'm doing more speaking and all these different things. And everyone thinks it's this amazing transformation that he's done. And it was like, one day of just being willing to push himself and stop being sick of not taking those opportunities and letting them go.
I'm so glad you brought this up. First of all, I will tell you, the first book I ever wrote was called Exiting the Comfort Zone. And that was me learning how to dance at age 50. And I had so much mental baggage. I was the worst dance student. But you know what I knew behind that? Victor, I knew as a child I wanted to learn how to dance. To me, it was like just this great way of feeling happy, feeling free, being creative. But I was carrying so much fearful mental baggage that always said, Maura, you're smart, but you have no rhythm or no, you whatever. Yeah. And you know what? I kept doing it because I knew I was going to feel better at the end of it. And I call the book Exiting the Comfort Zone, Dance or Die. Most people, and this goes right back to my original point, most people know intuitively, intrinsically, those things that feel inspiring for them, that they're really curious about or they want to express, but their fears and phobias keep them contained. So what happens is that most of us never become all that we want to be. We don't arise into our very best version of self, whatever that best may be, because we're unwilling to step out of the comfort zone. We're unwilling, let's say, to let our ego be bruised for a little bit, or to go into an area where maybe we don't know all the rules, or we have to learn something new, in adulthood. But the thing is, when we do, we gain so much confidence. Look at the example you just shared. We become a person of influence. And what I look to do is inspire other people to remember they can be a great person. I don't care if it means around the block, around the neighborhood, around the country, or around the world, but you can take whatever that concept is and become a person whose influence can ripple and really impact the lives and thoughts and world of other people. And I'm so passionate about it that what happened at Victor is I became the embodiment of the very belief systems I always had. And it's amazing how many of these thoughts are so universal. And with my background, about 10 years, I worked in two major corporations and I was in management, sales management. And I learned how to see people's excellence, or let's say diamonds in the rough. And I would always be that person helping to nurture those abilities and give people those opportunities to go and shine. And I look to be that and do that everywhere I go because I think we live in such a frightened, contained and disempowered world. And as people get out there and just step out of their own comfort zones, we can literally transform not only our local societies, but a global society.
And it's funny because when you were saying like starting this, your most recent journey at the age of 50, it's something that doesn't impress me in the best way. And what I mean by that is the amount of people, my previous show prior to this was I interviewed inspiring young entrepreneurs under the age of 35. I interviewed a couple of hundred of them. And I don't see, like, too many people use age as a barrier. And I love the inspiration that you get from it. I don't mean to take anything away from what you're doing. But the transformations that I can see in people that, you can do in one day, you can transform your public speaking. In 6 months, you can transform your health. In a year, you can learn so many different things. You can learn online marketing, or you can learn, whatever it may be. You can learn how to start and grow a business, or the numbers behind it, or whatever it may be. Like in the space of a year, so many people think that it takes 20 years. Like, sure, you're going to keep developing skills and you're going to get better at things. But I've spoken to 14-year-olds on my show who are running successful businesses. And the other end of it, there's Ray Kroc, and he started McDonald's, or started growing it into a franchise, and Colonel Sanders, that they were in their 50s and 60s when they were doing that. And so it's just a self-limiting belief that many of us have, and I applaud you for not letting that be a self-limiting belief, and it's going to hopefully inspire other people. Well, I know it will inspire other people, and so I don't mean to take, when I say it doesn't impress me, I mean it doesn't impress me, because I know that you don't sound like the person who would let self-limiting beliefs be the reason. But if you can break that excuse down for other people, you're going to inspire a lot of other people to live an awesome second half.
Yes. Now, you want to know the irony. This is what's kind of, I think it's pretty neat. My prime, I don't say my prime audiences, are university students, graduate students throughout the world, or young national leadership organizations. And so here I am at my age talking to students that are in universities. But the whole idea is, who do you want to be? And that's what I look to do, is to remind people to go within, find that light within them that says, this is something I always wanted to do, but maybe I need somebody to give me permission or to remind me, yes, I can. And the thing is, let me tell you this too, Victor, I knew always that at some point in my life, I was going to be a person of great influence in the marketplace of ideas internationally. But I also knew that my time had not yet come, and I didn't want to be a 23-year-old or even a 30-year-old or 35-year-old telling people this is the way you could live, when I did not have sufficient life experience or travel experience or whatever it may have been. But do you know how many people there are today? And I see this all the time in the US and overseas. They follow the path that's in front of them. They go to university, they work really hard, and they're hoping somebody out there is going to give them a job. Somebody's going to fit them in their box somewhere. And then they realize all the education they have, all the work they did, isn't going to guarantee them a career. So they are the same young people that are thinking, I waited my whole life to be prepared to go out there and make my mark, and I don't know what to do next. And I bring them right into that space. Who do you want to be? And take off those limitations that the world imposes on you. And a lot of them are old paradigms. And sometimes you just need to say, guess what? This paradigm isn't working for me. I need to step out of it. So whether you are 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, whatever you are, step out. And if you don't step out, don't wait for the world to do it for you. So that's basically my message. And I think that we can literally transform all of society and government and even the educational system. We can transform so much as people do step out.
And I think that's the important message. You've been able to amplify your message by, you've been on 400 different media outlets, podcasts, TV shows, radio, print media, digital print media. What are some of the strategies that you've employed that you found effective, or any kind of frameworks that you've found that aspiring speakers out there who have that message, who are the game changers but are playing too small at the moment, can use to start getting some exposure?
Ooh, that's a huge question. I'm going to give you, all right, first of all, that I wanted to go travel the world and make new friends. So I do travel the world. And you know what I started doing when I originally was doing video interviews, or really quick little videos? I would go out and interview people. Or I would write, and I would make the piece about somebody else. But in the process, with all of my inquiring questions, with all of my personal research, with all the things I liked and I was following, somewhere along the line, the paradigm sort of shifted. And all of a sudden, then I became a person of interest that other people wanted to speak to, because I had already been out there and was learning things on my own. So let me say this first of all. You need to go out and do the work yourself. There's some people that think they don't want to work. They just want to be this instant overnight success. Mm-hmm. What people don't realize is, by putting in the time, the effort, but let's say the passion into what you want to do, you literally, and attention, you literally transform yourself into that very person you wanted to be. So I'll tell you, case in point, I travel, I interview, I research, I write, I make contacts, I make friends. I'll give you one of my best stories. I was away several years ago in England. And while I was there, I wanted to go to Liverpool. Now, I already dated myself. I was a little kid when JFK was in the White House, but I was also a little kid when the Beatles came out of Liverpool. So I'm in Liverpool, and I thought, and I was writing for Huffington Post, and I thought, you know what? I want to do a backstory on where did the Beatles come from? You know, we know they were huge, but what was their backstory? Where did they get started from? How did they step out of the box? So as I'm walking around Liverpool and doing my own research and inquiry, I walk past the BBC studios. I go in, I show them my business card. I said, I know it's really late. I said, but is there anybody here working at BBC that would possibly remember the Beatles that I could ask some questions and do some research with? And the woman went up into the high rise. She came back down. She said, I'm sorry, the one guy who I'd love to connect you with already left. And somebody else, meanwhile, came down. Well, he was the he was running one of their talk shows daily on the BBC. And he said to me, Maura, I'm sorry, I'm too young to know the Beatles. He said, but can I interview you? So Victor, here I was doing research on the Beatles overseas. And I ended up putting that article in Huffington Post. But I ended up with a nearly half hour prime interview on BBC Radio. And I got to talk about all the things I was interested in. So I would say, follow what you love, get out there, step out of your comfort zone, use every opportunity you can to connect with people, do the work. And then I will also say that what I now help people with, especially authors or people who want to raise their influence level, is I give them various resources. One of the ways I found you was either through Andrew Allman's guest list, or I found you through radio guest list, correct? I don't remember Andrew's. Which one it was. Yep. You were busy looking for people.
Yep.
And I pitched you, right?
Yep.
So I teach people how to do that, and also how to take what they're interested in and help someone else's mission advance. And I'm a great connector that way. So does that help answer the question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Use every resource, and you maximize it and leverage it and repeat it.
And when you've pitched, say, TV media or print media, are there any strategies that you've, like, things that have worked effectively for you from, if you say, cold emailing or warm emailing somebody? Are you just, do you go on the respond to what they want leads, like you're finding it on PR web and things like that? Or are you reaching out to people and saying, hey, yeah, I think I'd be, yeah, this would be a great piece for your newspaper or your magazine or whatever it may be?
You know, very, very good question. Let me give you one that just comes to mind now. We have NBC TV here in the United States, and I was following, this was probably 2 years ago, I don't know. I was following what was going on with our presidential campaign. And at the time, people, you know this, you're laughing because everybody knows U.S. news. They know Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton and Hillary versus Donald. It continues 2 years after the election. But I am very attuned to the culture and to, I would say, the emotional health of where people are in society. And I realized people were getting so upset. So one day I just thought to myself, remember, I don't know if you recall this, but Hillary Clinton must have gone to Vladimir Putin one day, and she delivered to him this giant red plastic button, and it was called the reset button because something had gone wrong and she wanted to reset U.S.-Soviet relations. So I thought, you know what? I am going to offer to NBC TV, we have a syndicated show right out of Tampa, the idea of a happiness reset. People were really upset. I used Hillary Clinton. I no sooner had the idea, I got the name of the name and the email of the producer at this NBC studios. Not only did I just come up with this concept of, I think your people would be interested in a happiness reset because people are very upset now. I no sooner sent out the email, and 3 minutes later, the producer said to me, can you give me a little, a 3 minute idea as to how you think this would work? And the next week I was on the show. So it's a combination of a multitude of things, but I'm always out there. My antennas are always working very creatively. So, and here's another thing. I've always been interested in foreign relations, goodwill, and you know, if I could have, I probably would have been a goodwill ambassador down to Latin America. So even when I travel, I will get in touch with the American embassies in foreign countries. Three of those American embassies have had me in speaking at the American Corners. And so wherever I am, I'm literally thinking, what are some of the avenues? They're not always the traditional avenues, but they're things that are of interest to me. Now, what may happen? What if I write 50 letters and two of those letters, or letters, emails, come back? Well, guess what? Nothing ventured, nothing gained. And then I end up creating a resume unlike anybody else's. And one of my other things is, I don't believe in competition. I don't believe in trying to best you at what you're doing or put a nail in your coffin to drive you down into the ground so I could walk over you. What I look at is, what am I interested in? Where am I interested in being excellent? And I'm going to pursue those things, and I become uniquely me. And I will teach and train and, let's say, help other people decide and discover what their best assets are and help them brand themselves in a way that's germane and very authentic for them. And then that's really what helps create a personality and an idea person that other people want to hear. And I'm telling you, there's something so freeing about that when you know you walk through life and you have never badmouthed anybody, but you've literally created your own pathway to success. It is it's empowering and it's uplifting. And I want to say it literally creates a wider path for you the farther out you go, because you never have to worry who's behind you that you badmouthed or harmed on your way up the ladder.
Yeah. And I think there's very few companies that truly have competition. I mean, if you don't have market saturation in the whole world, like you haven't got, like if you're Apple versus Samsung, you're fighting for, you're basically two of the companies fighting for everybody's phone. There's not necessarily abundance there, but for the majority of us who are speakers, who are trainers, yeah, there's going to be another 100 or another 1,000 people doing somewhat similar things to you, and you can only give so many talks per day or get so many people into your trainings, or even if you've got trainers that are doing the stuff for you, there's only so many people in the world that you're probably going to get to, no matter how big your dreams and aspirations. So many people, I've been to Tony Robbins and gone back to like a workplace that I was working at the time, and 90% of the people had never heard of him. And he's like, yeah, you're sitting there going, what do you mean? Like, he's one of the, yeah, he's the biggest name in mindset, motivation, inspiration, yeah. Yeah, whatever you want to call it, peak performance. And I've never heard of him. Like, he's not even in a
factor. Is that what you're going to say? Factor?
Yeah, well, he's not even in a scarcity place where he's oversaturated. Yeah, it's petrol companies and supermarkets and, you know, large chains. They're the only places that have got like direct competition, I feel. One versus the other. Yeah, if all of them go to the other place, they go out of business.
You know, Victor, this is interesting. A lot of what I do, I have learned through life experience. And I mentioned to you, I had a corporate career in management. And we were selling what I would consider vaporware. There's a lot of people out there that sell vaporware. We were in long-distance communications. So basically, it was something you couldn't even see. And I would also call it back then, it was a commodity item. Just like coffee's a commodity, right?
Yep.
How many people are out there selling coffee? How many brands are there? But here's what I learned back in the day when I'm thinking, how do we identify ourselves? Let's say we were the number three corporation in the United States, but we had no marketing. And we could not, how do I say this? We could not compare ourselves with the big guys. I remember thinking to myself as the manager, can't sell against these people with their big names, their big marketing, their big advertising dollars. But you know what I used to think about? What do we have that other people don't? And I started capitalizing on those things. And that was where I learned the fine art of creating personal brands around your own flavor. Now, you know what my flavor is? Okay, I'm the ambassador of happiness. I speak about things that uplift the human spirit. But I'm also a person that's constantly inquiring. I love to ask reflective questions. And number two, I love to tell stories. So these are things that are really of interest to me. What most people try to do is they try to absolutely duplicate somebody else's success. And in the process, they are always going to be number two or number three or number 15 or number 1500. But when people learn to take their commodity, let's say it's a skill set, right? But they add to it their own spice. And it could be something like, listen, this is, might sound crazy, but how many people could become famous as a public speaker because they have a lisp or because they like to tell jokes or because they have a way of twisting or shifting the viewpoint in a way that nobody else ever heard of it? We don't need to capture the entire world. What we want as public speakers are those individuals and those markets that we want to have an influence and impact over so that we can change something, maybe for the better, hopefully for the brighter. And I think we're always taught to be like, you know, years ago we had Elvis Presley. You know how many Elvis impersonators there are? But there was only one Elvis. And I'll tell you something, Elvis was, he was such a weird kid. Nobody knew what to do with him. But Elvis learned to be Elvis. And that's why my message for everybody is learn to be your best self. And oftentimes it's the process that gets you there. And why not learn to find out what makes you unique and capitalize on those things? And that's where you get to stand out from the rest without having to negatively compete.
That's brilliant. And so I think that's an awesome place to finish up, everyone. Find your unique selling point. Find what your unique speaking point, what makes you different, and then figure out how you can amplify it, whether that be speaking, getting in front of media, branding yourself, which is obviously of the utmost importance, and all of those things. Yeah, if you work back on this episode, I'd probably start at the end, find out what makes you unique, and then work your way back on the things we talked about, because there's a ton of gold in there. And on that, I just want to welcome you to our Speaker Nation family. And if people want to find out more about you, find out what you've been doing or get in touch, where can they go and what can they do?
The easiest way to reach me is through my website. It's my name, Maura, M as in Mary, A-U-R-A, followed by the number 4 and the letter U. Maura for you. I am like the advocate for you, whoever you might be. And they could write to me, Maura@MauraForYou.com. The other thing, since you've got a group of listeners, I have a podcast out, and it's Maura Sweeney, Living Happy Inside Out. And for people who just need a quick pick-me-up, a shift in their mindset, my podcasts are usually 10 minutes long. They open up with a reflective question. They tell a story. They give a quick call to action. So, you know, sometimes you're in a negative space, and you need to feel more empowered and uplifted. Subscribe Maura @MauraForYou, Maura Sweeney, Living Happy Inside Out. Awesome. So thanks, Victor.
That's my pleasure. We'll link all of that at publicspeakingblueprint.com. And I'd highly recommend jump on and get your audio coffee in the morning, your 10 minutes of inspiration and story from the happiness queen herself. So thanks a lot. And I look forward to hopefully catching you on this side of the world or seeing you on your side in the near future.
And you know, I would love it. I've been to 60-odd countries, and I have not yet been to New Zealand or Australia, so I'll be sure to remember you.
Cool.
Thanks, Victor.
Thanks.
If you want to fast-track your confidence and impact with public speaking, then be sure to jump over to publicspeakingblueprint.com, where there's an array of free resources to help you no matter where you are on your journey to becoming a more powerful speaker. And while you're at it, jump over to Facebook and join our free community called Speaker Nation, where there's a ton of other like-minded individuals just like yourself looking to level up. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss next week's episode.